Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the next episode of the podcast. This episode is right in line with the season, one of gratitude and thanks, and of course, delicious turkey and pumpkin pie. Well, I'm actually lying. There is no mention of turkey and pumpkin pie in this episode, but my guest, Kevin Palmieri, has lots to be thankful for. He's so funny. I found a clip where he says, "Some people find rock bottom, but I found out that rock bottom has a basement." You know, in his mid-20s, Kevin had it all. I mean, he had everything that we dream of, yet he still ended up sitting one day on his bed and wondering if all of it was worth it and if all of it had meaning. And, you know, what did that even mean? Well, Kevin decided to forge on ahead and create a life that had meaning, that had purpose, where he could give back. And for example, he's the CSO, founder and host of Next Level University, a global top 100 self-improvement podcast with more than 2,000 episodes, everybody. And it reaches over a million people in more than 180 countries. You'll hear in our conversation that much of his childhood really, really, really has informed his approach to life now. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Kevin Palmieri.
I have a very high net worth goal. One of the reasons, and I'll cry talking about it, I just want to help people with money. I do. That has been a dream of mine since I was a little boy, is to go to the mall, which might cease to exist by the time I can do it, and go to a single parent and say, "Whatever you need, I got it. Whatever you need. Whatever you need for your kids, I got it. Thanksgiving, got it. If I don't accomplish that, I will have failed at what I think my mission is." I am Kevin Palmieri. I am the founder and the host of Next Level University, a global top 100 podcast with 2,250 episodes as of today. And yeah, I love this. I love helping people, and I love having deep conversations that facilitate change. I didn't know you could make a career out of that, and somehow we did.
You're like, who knew?
Who knew?
Yeah, who knew? Well, okay, so you must love talking to people. Would you say that's true?
I like talking to the right people.
Ooh.
I would say.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I think it's a conversation of core values, core beliefs, and core aspirations. With some people, you get permission to talk about the stuff that you value. And with other people, you don't as much because they don't value what you value. So when I go to like a wedding or something, I am not the center of attention. I'm fine being in the corner. But when we're talking about podcasting or the stuff that I love, self-improvement, it's different. There's a different level of energy for me, for sure.
Yeah, well, I have serious social anxiety. So while you'll be in the corner, I would be under a table, hopefully hiding.
Well, we'd be close. We'd be close to each other, for sure. Yeah.
I'm just intrigued because I love names. Are you Italian?
Not as much as you think.
Ooh, do tell.
Yeah. What I need to do, because that's like a cop out, I need to go and look at my ancestry thing to figure out exactly what percentage I am. But I think I'm like a mutt. I'm just like 25% this, 10% this. So it's probably not the majority of my ethnicity is what I would say.
Because I was just curious what your last name meant. Do you know?
I don't.
Okay.
No, I don't.
Okay.
Maybe we can make something up.
We could. I'm kind of thinking of like maybe in the Middle Ages, a sect of guards that kept the castle safe. Ooh. Something like that. How about that?
I like that. Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Maybe they used palm fronds to defend themselves.
That's fine too. I'll accept that. But I love the fact that they were defenders. I'm in on that.
You're in on that.
I accept.
You accept. Thank goodness. Okay. Let me ask you, when you were a kid, is this what you dreamt about doing?
When I was a kid, this didn't exist. So no, I wanted to, be a professional wrestler.
Oh.
Yeah, I grew up in a household that watched a lot of wrestling, and I was like, whoa, if I could do that, that would be awesome. So that was my first thing. And then after that, I wanted to be a baseball player because I played baseball and I was pretty good. Didn't have the self-belief, though. I didn't think I could. And then in high school, I wanted to be a professional mixed martial arts fighter.
Wow.
So, and I pursued that for some time. I trained for several years and then I ended up tearing my shoulder. So I've always, the interesting thing in retrospect, I can connect this. I've always wanted to do something outside the realm of what people thought I should. Always. I've connected the dots on that recently. I got, you know how so many people try to get significance by fitting in?
Yes.
I think I knew I never was really going to fit in. So I got my significance from standing out in unique ways. So it was always, I'm just going to do something different. And I didn't go to college and everybody thought that was crazy. And it probably was at the time. But yes, I wanted to be a professional wrestler, baseball player, and then professional fighter. That was the order.
That's actually fascinating because I have also taken the road less traveled, but I did it because it felt like a matter of survival. And by that, I mean, you know, I went to college and I graduated. I did it. Well, I love learning. As I already told you, I studied vocabulary words. I loved them when I was a kid, but I just thought, okay, college, I'm going to go. I'm going to do what makes me happy, which was English and speech communications, which led to nowhere. I'm just putting it out there right now. I'm just a voracious reader. I actually got banned from the library in junior high, because my parents were afraid that I wasn't making any social connections. So they literally, the guidance counselor had an intervention, shall we say, when I was in eighth grade and I was no longer allowed into the library anymore. But I just knew something about myself. When I was a kid, I dreamt about working in a lab or a library because I wanted to learn. Now, life has not turned out that way because of various things. But the only way I could live a life that felt good to me, even though it was a little chaotic, was to move away from my family to the West Coast, up to Bellingham, Washington, for a few years, and then Portland, and get away from them because everybody in the family has an idea of how you should live. Am I right?
Yeah, of course. 100%.
My God. 100%. It drives me crazy. So I was listening to your story and I was just thinking about your, like the wrestling. First of all, how disappointed were you to find out that it was actually quote unquote entertainment?
I think I found out like later in life after it had already, it wasn't a dream anymore. So I was okay with it.
Okay. But all of your, you know, the baseball and then the mixed martial arts, all very physical, you know?
Yeah. One of the things that I lacked, so this was a lesson that I learned recently too. I was pretty good at a lot of things, but the one thing that I had that I think was statistically higher than most people is I just didn't care if I had to like suffer or get hurt. It didn't really bother me. To this day, I don't really care that much. I've always respected people who live a self-destructive lifestyle in a progressive way, not like a wrecking your life through addiction type of thing. I'm not saying that's what I aspire to, right? And if you're going through that, I'm not shaming that. When I used to watch hockey all the time, I loved the enforcers, the people that stuck up for the people on the team. I always respected that. So I don't know. I think there's that protector in me that you spoke to in my namesake, which might be or not, but there is a piece of me that I'm okay with suffering for other people. Like I've kind of always been okay with that because I think that's one of the skills, for lack of better phrasing, that I've always had to practice. So when I was younger, my cousin and I used to practice wrestling. That was our thing. He liked wrestling. I liked wrestling. And he used to throw me into thorn bushes. He used to hit me over the head with metal, like the real metal folding chairs. And there was always a piece of me that just kind of liked it. I was like, I could handle this. So there's something there for sure. Maybe the miracle, Kirsten, is I'm still here. Maybe that's the miracle.
That actually might be the case. I was thinking about, I don't know, have you ever seen any, this is going to date me, but any Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Of course. Yeah, of course.
Do you remember the one where he is kicking the tree over and over to harden the part of his leg in front for combat? I guess, I don't even know, there must be some professional word for that to, like, I don't know. Anyway.
Conditioning, they call it. Like,
yeah.
Conditioning.
Totally. And so I just remember watching that scene and being like, oh my God, dear God, that looks horrific. And I can't believe he's doing that, even while understanding why he was doing that. But, you know, when my parents were getting divorced, when I was a kid, it was very acrimonious. It was like, it was not a good divorce. And I played soccer. I was like a soccer player in high school. They called me Kamikaze Kirsten because I would just go in like wholeheartedly with my body. And I realized later, you know, upon reflection, that I was so aggressive and so unstoppable when I was a kid, because soccer was a way that I could get my confusion and my anger at the divorce out. It was so cathartic for me. It was really helpful. But, you know, in the process of doing that, I wore shin guards and everything. I got kicked so many times on my left front shin that I've lost all feeling in that leg from the front of my, but that's how, I mean, I realized later on that I was doing that because after a while, the pain felt good. I don't know if that makes any sense, because it felt that I was like, I was getting something done. I was showing up for my team, but then I also could channel all of my confusion and I don't know, I guess you could say grief too, into that spot. Like, it took my mind off of what was going on in my life. Yeah. If that makes any sense.
100%.
Yeah, I mean, I still don't have feeling in that leg.
Well, if you ever become a professional fighter, you'll be good. And that'll be the cheat code right there.
I wish I could do what Jean-Claude Van Damme could do. I dance a little bit better than he does, very minimally. He's a terrible dancer, as we've all seen. But, you know, yeah, I'm impressed. Okay, I'm so glad you know who he is, because I felt kind of old.
So. No, Arnold's. Sylvester Stallone, I was big into them as I was getting older. Yeah, for sure. Rocky and Terminator and Commando, all those movies.
Okay, good.
Rambo.
Is it horrible if I confess that Universal Soldier was one of my favorites?
No. I feel like one of my favorites is Eraser with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and almost nobody knows about it.
Oh yeah. It's the one where they come to kill him, right? It's like,
all of them. I mean,
yes, that's true.
Flip a coin.
Right. Like, doesn't he get put on a list where they're going to, they send a strike team? Like, or what's that one about?
I haven't. Commando, he like battles an army.
Okay.
A Terminator, I feel like most people know. The one scene I remember from Eraser is there's like an alligator or a crocodile and they're like fighting next to it. That's like the nostalgia for me. I also had a very strange childhood where one of the first movies I ever remember seeing is Child's Play, like the Chucky doll.
Oh my God.
I remember that vividly. I was not old enough to be watching that.
Okay.
I just have nightmares of that.
No. I don't blame you. I have to tell you that, I mean, I grew up overseas. And so on one of the times when we were coming back to the States, we were in a Western hotel room. I don't know why I'm telling you all this. This is totally off topic for my podcast.
I love it.
But there was this movie on that was made in the 80s. And it was this horrific movie, I remember, with Michael Caine and, my gosh, Sean Connery, I believe. Anyway, I was so little and I remember being in the room with the adults and I think it was just on the TV because back then there was no cable. And the final few 15 minutes is them being, they're like in another country. They've done something so bad that they're being executed. And the final, you know, 15 minutes is them being put to death. And I mean, I had... nightmares about this. I was like, I put to bed and I like crept out of bed. Why was I watching this movie? Even now, like thinking about it, my stomach gets sick because it was so gory and gross. And I can't even think of what the movie was, but yeah, it's so crazy what affects us as children. But I've never seen Child's Play, by the way. Never.
Don't do it. Yeah. Don't do it. I watched it recently and I was like, oh my goodness, I can't believe I was afraid of this. Now, I was like 8 years old, so of course I was afraid of it. But It's a weird movie. It is a weird movie. It does not hold up.
I don't like haunted dolls or puppets.
Completely understandable. It's all of that and worse. Yeah, no, that's not for you. I think that's a skip.
Okay, good. Yeah, I'll watch Princess Bride again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's good. And little Princess Bride, little Jean-Claude Van Damme, Child's Play. No, skip. That's a skip for you.
Well, I'd love to know, you know, I don't know if you want to talk about this, but it's my second question. Did you grow up in a religious household? If so, what did that look like? You know, if not, do you feel like you have any connection to whatever we can't see? Do you even believe in it? I've had all sorts of people on the show, from atheists to Baha'i to everything, all that to say any answer is correct.
No, it was not religious at all. I don't know. I think the first time I ever went to a church was like for a relative's first communion or something. I've only been in a church maybe 3 times, I think, in my entire life. So yeah, there was no religion, no talk of any of that. And I don't know. I went through a phase where I was very like energy and manifestation and the universe. And then I think as I got deeper into business, I started to realize, like, for me, I think that was an escape. Ah. I was so out of my element and I was so uncertain of the fact of whether or not I was going to be successful, and I couldn't pay my bills, that I just wanted to connect to something. I couldn't see anything and I didn't have any faith that I was going to be successful. So I just wanted to connect to something. And I got into this like spiritual phase where I was reading a lot of Deepak Chopra and Sadhguru. I was deep into that. And then I kind of went through that and I was like, well, that was good for a season, but it made me feel better, but it didn't necessarily create the skills that I felt like I needed. So then the next phase was more like external stuff. Okay. But I think the hard part for me with that question is so much of the work that I've done over the last 8 years has been like the internal ego, self-awareness. Does any of this matter? Does all of this matter? Well, everything matters, but how much? I'm very philosophical by nature. So I'm always trying to think of like, what if, what if, what if? But yeah, I'm not religious at all at this point is what I would say. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That question of the ego is so interesting because, you know, there are some people that say it's very important to, I don't know, manage it, get to know it. How do you bring it healthfully into the world so that it's not, you know, hurting other people or hurting yourself? At the place that I worked, so I have been doing all of this for a long time too, and I've kind of lost patience with people who are ruled by their egos. I mean, I live in Santa Fe, New Mexico, which is a city of a lot of artists and semi-famous people who think that they are God's gift to the universe. And I'll never forget when I came to visit here about 20 years ago, I went out to dinner with a friend and a bunch of poets and other people. And this older woman came up to me at the end of the dinner. She was probably in her like 75 or 80. And she said to me, I totally felt like I was being set up for failure. I kind of just knew it was coming. She said, so who's your favorite poet? And I'm from after we lived overseas, I lived in the Midwest. And I said, oh, I really love Robert Frost. And that's partially because one of his poems is one of my favorites. And he says a lot in a way that is very simple and beautiful and has emerged from the Midwest. And the look she got on her face was so contemptuous. And like, basically she was like, you're such a simpleton. You know, I can't believe, I mean, you could feel her disdain. And I thought, you know what? She has been waiting this entire time to put me in my place. She's been waiting.
Yeah.
And that was in Santa Fe. And I just keep meeting people like that. And I always think, oh, you haven't done your interior work. You know, you live to lord it over people and make other people feel small because you don't really understand what's going on. And I avoid those people like the plague.
Understandable. The hard thing is, it's one of those things where they look more confident and they look more secure and they look more put together. But behind the scenes, internally, it's not that case. But when you and I have a vulnerable conversation and we don't have the answers to everything and we misspeak and it's like, I don't really know the answer, in the moment, it looks like a loss. It's like, well, you don't know that much, but that's how you learn. That's how you learn. I don't even know. If somebody asked me that, who's my favorite poet? I don't even know if I have one. I wouldn't have. They would have looked down on me a little bit more than you, I think, Kirsten. I would have taken that for you. I'd be like, I don't know. Eminem, probably. Marshall Mathers, probably my favorite poet.
Valid. Right. You know what? It actually taught me a lot because I stepped back and it was a moment for me where I thought, oh, how has this made me feel? Like she really wanted to shame me and make me feel bad. And so for me, when I have an experience like that, I think this is learning because I never want to make anyone else feel this way ever. And so I thought, another, you know, lesson, and this is how words are powerful and create other people's worlds and shape them. You know, the words that are coming out of my mouth are so important, no matter what direction they go. I need to be really careful because I can change someone's whole reality with what's coming out of my mouth. Mm. But also, you know, I thought, okay, now this is information about her. I never want to ever encounter her again. So I learned like several lessons, and I think it's important, like with your job now, right? It's words, it's conversations, it's teachings, it's representing yourself to the world. And I'm sure you consider the same things when you put together what you're doing.
I try. Yeah, I try. It's hard because I'm not somebody who's very opinionated. I'm very much in the middle on everything. Like I try not to live on either extreme. Like when I hear something, and everybody's like, this is exactly how it is, I'm always like, there's no way it possibly could be. There has to be another end of it. I don't know what that end is. It usually drives more towards the middle in some way. I just want to have all the information. But I mean, I've done a lot of episodes, right? And I know more now than I did when I started. So would I take back some of the things I said? Of course. Of course. I don't have that opportunity because that's out there forever. But yeah, it makes it hard. It makes it hard for sure. I think when you don't have an answer, that's when it's the hardest. What I say now is I haven't done enough intelligent research to have an opinion on that yet. I don't know. I need more data before I commit to saying something, but everybody wants to say something. So it's hard. It's hard. Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Flip the script. Do you feel, on a scale of 0 to 10, how much do you feel like you belong in anywhere?
3.
Three. I've noticed the people who feel like they belong the least are the best at creating belonging in others.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah. It's almost like we have what we call, there's a bunch of different core wounds. I'm sure you've done the work and done the research. What we've seen is there's defective me, not, I don't feel good enough. I feel like I'm broken. I don't feel like I'm ever going to be anything to anybody. There's unwanted, which is essentially not belonging. And there's unlovable. If I show you all of who I am, you're going to villainize. What we've seen is the unwanteds, the people who really struggle to find their place, are really good at creating a place for everybody else. And I see a lot of that. Like, you're so warm and welcoming, and it's like, okay, yeah, you must have been somebody who searched for belonging and it was a struggle to find it. So you just created your own. And I respect that deeply.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, I didn't understand the world a lot. Yeah. I grew up in Guyana and then Pakistan until I was 10. So then we came back to the States and it was, you want to talk about not understanding anything about Western civilization or culture. I felt like an alien in the Midwest in Illinois. I mean, nothing made any sense. And I'm like, I literally don't understand, you know, why having Kraft singles in your lunch makes you popular. Or someone, you know, if you don't have them, you're not. It was like this world of richness and depth I was living in. And then I came to the States where everything was really shallow and kind of vacuous. But, you know, kids are kids. So I mean, I spent several years. I actually had to do fourth grade again because I could not adjust. So I did fourth grade twice. And I still, how old am I? And I just think to myself, I don't understand what's happening in general, like most of the time with everybody, because, you know, those journeys to get to know ourselves and work with our egos and philosophical questions, it's not something you're going to get done in 2 weeks. This is like a years long process. And
it sucks.
It does suck.
It sucks.
There's a lot of suck.
Yeah. There's a lot of suck. And as you get like more, I'll never forget. I was hanging out with a friend of mine and their family, and we were passing around a joint on a dock looking up at the stars. And I said, isn't it interesting how we're on a rock spinning through the universe and none of this really matters in the grand scheme of things? Like, we are so small. And if gravity ever decided to take a day off, which I realize it doesn't, we would just float off into space and that would be the end of it. And they were like, that is the dumbest thing ever. And I was like, oh, okay. You don't think about that? Oh, okay. I feel like that is incredibly accurate, but I also understand that is not everybody wants to think about existence all the time. And I just happen to love it. I enjoy it very much.
Okay. You and I will get along then, because I think about this stuff all the time.
I would have guessed.
And I love, you know, I love the fact that we're so small. There's something really, there's so much potential and possibility in how small we are, because partially I'm hiding under the table at the wedding because I don't want to be noticed, because typically the people who aren't noticed can engage in the most mischief. Okay. And that's, I find very exciting and provocative. It's the people we don't notice that are creating the magic in the world. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that in the entire universe, I'm so small, because that means I'm not going to be noticed when I'm being subversive, even in the universe. If there is some God watching us all, or energy, or whatever you want to call it. First of all, I think that energy is, you know, chaotic trickster energy, and they appreciate the ones who are on the margins and who are like mixing things up. But also I love that our lives are they're like evanescent, and they're ephemeral. They don't last a long time. And there's something really beautiful about that for me.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I think about this, and then I look around, and I'm like, why isn't there anyone to talk about? Like, where is everybody? Cause you know, people are trying to feed their families. They're trying to keep their jobs. They're trying to, you know, get to work on time. I just have had this life where I've, you know, I don't have some of the creature comforts that everybody takes for granted, but that's a decision I've made so that I can have more space in other places, so that I can think about these things, which might be a little dark, and I should maybe get out every once in a while.
I respect it deeply. I mean, as long as you're fulfilled in the process of doing it, who is anybody else to tell you you should get out, you know?
I like your sleeve, by the way. Does it signify anything? Is it telling a story?
Yes. So when I was 16 years of age, I got barbed wire like every 16-year-old wants. And then I was like, maybe that's not the best idea ever of all time. So I have a devil and angel playing chess for control of the world on my chest.
Cool.
So that was like, I felt like that was a really good idea. And unfortunately, the devil is winning. So that was my perspective of the world. And at times it still is. And then I have, so that comes down to my arm over here. So that's the angel, and the devil's on my chest, and there's the chessboard. And then I have a rose coming through concrete under there. And then, so this one, it's probably harder to see, but I didn't know my dad. I didn't meet my dad until I was 27 with the understanding that he was my dad. So this is a man and a young boy walking through a forest together, and where they're supposed to be holding hands, it fades to nothing, because that was my experience with my dad. And then the forest is just filled with ghouls and goblins, because I feel like most of my life was just figure out everything by yourself, and you're essentially walking through a dark forest filled with bad things, and you're gonna have to find a way to get to the other side. So that was pretty much that. And then I have never quit on my other, on my forearm. So yeah, they all mean something, but the barbed wire didn't. So now that's covered up.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Wow. Yes. I was looking at your sleeve and I was thinking that is beautiful and it's telling a story and I need to ask. My only encounter with barbed wire was when I was walking the Camino, and I was on this path and there was kind of like this wooden gate in front of me and it was locked. Whoever had gone through me on the path before had locked it. And the only way I could get back on the path was to go into this cow field and then with my backpack sort of try to clamber over the barbed wire.
Oh no.
It didn't work. Something caught on the barbed wire and I actually literally flipped over the barbed wire fence with my backpack still stuck to the barbed wire and I was hanging there. It was really embarrassing and nobody saw me. So
was the something part of you or was it like part of your backpack that got caught?
It was part of my backpack. Thank God. You have to know that I'm the most accident prone person on the planet. So when I approached that barbed wire, I thought to myself, this is not going to end well. And as long as I know and am ready for whatever this looks like, I have no other choice. Mm. So yeah, it was very, ended up with my butt in the mud and my arms hanging up and the backpack still stuck in the barbed wire. So
well, you got a cool story to tell. So that's, and you're here, you made it. And you got a cool story.
I think it's very important to laugh at the places where we make mistakes and look silly. So
yes,
I wanted to, this might be just, I might misunderstand mixed martial arts. I just want to ask you, but I figure that you will have an answer to this. So you know how, like when people do certain martial arts, there is this kind of energetic, mysterious, like component to it, mm-hmm. where you might be channeling energy or connecting with something outside yourself. Does mixed martial arts have that?
If you're watching this, please do not villainize. Yes, but that doesn't really work in a real fight.
Okay.
It's kind of like that type of, I've seen a lot of like the, oh, I'm going to do this and then it's going to make you do it. Like that doesn't really work in real life, but it works really well. If you want to have a school, it is out there, but it doesn't work based on the evidence I've seen of the thousands of fights I've watched.
I'm still waiting to become like Neo. I don't know if you are from the Matrix and just,
I can't see it happening. You know, I can't see it
someday.
Well, I hope that for you, for sure. I do. You're welcome.
Well, you know, you talk about your childhood mm-hmm. and kind of dreaming what you could become. And I think it's really powerful and beautiful. Thank you. I am glad I asked about your sleep because that tells me a lot. I also love that so much of your childhood and getting into high school, it was about physicality, right? And being good and adept and physically like in the world. And, you know, I grew up with a dad who wasn't around very often because he was a workaholic and a perfectionist, which modeled for me, you know, a way to be in the world around work. Mm-hmm. But also I could see that it was unhealthy. And there's something about like missing your parents when you're young. You know, I knew I never wanted to have a job where, you know, I didn't see the people that I loved, where I was like, even after work, always thinking about work. I just knew that. And, you know, people ask me, what are you doing now? And I'm like, I don't actually know. I mean, I'm doing this podcast, but for work, I'm kind of like a dandelion seed being blown on the wind because that's what I like. I like to have sort of a light life where I don't have to commit to anything, which is a whole other conversation, by the way, my desire to never commit to anything.
At least you're aware of it.
Oh gosh. Yes, right? I am. Yes. But all this to say, do you think that, you know, your childhood, your, you know, kind of going through this forest and there are ghouls and goblins in the forest and then meeting your father after all those years, but really trying to figure out where you belonged in the world. Do you think it helped you or steered you towards starting your podcast?
What led me to start my podcast was based on that. Yeah. My thought process was, if as an adult, I just get all the things I didn't have as a child, I should be whole. That was my, so when I was a little boy, I felt insignificant around women. So in my mid early 20s, I dated very attractive people and it was like, okay, that should do it. I'm small, I'm 5'4" on a good day. So I always felt overlooked by people. Okay, I'll just be a bodybuilder and get really strong and get lean and have abs and everybody will respect that. And I think the deepest wound for me was we were broke. You wouldn't know it because I always had stuff. I never went hungry and it never looked like we were broke, but the conversations behind the scenes were not good about money. My assumption was if I get to the place where I have so much certainty when it comes to money, I think everything else could just kind of work itself out. So in my mid 20s, I was making six figures. I was competing in a bodybuilding show all at the same time. And I was dating a model.
Wow. And
I realized that that didn't do it. That didn't fix it. I made the most money I'd ever made. I started a podcast after realizing that I lived most of my life unconsciously. The opposite of unconscious is hyperconscious. So I started a podcast called the Hyperconscious Podcast. So yeah, in a way, it all led to that. But I was the guy who I don't even think I'm supposed to be here, like where I am today. It is so mind-blowing to me that this is what I get to do. Because when I log off of here, I'm just a regular person. And I think people lose sight of that. It's like, oh, no, they're... I had a moment where I was watching football one day and I was like, these are just regular people who are really good at this one thing. Like they feel pain and they have doubts in different things and they have family issues and they get sick. They're just regular people who are extraordinary at this. And I just, that changed my perspective on everything. So yeah, long answer long, everything led to the podcast. And then I think the reason we do it the way we do is based on the fact that I grew up without a dad, my business partner and co-host, his dad passed away in a car accident when he was two. That has been a bond for us. We used to spend Father's Day together. That was like our thing. All of our friends would hang out with their fathers and we would just go fishing together or whatever it was. Then we started a charity for that. So that everything is because of that and through that for sure. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. That is just that the fact that you two found each other and became friends and then you have this collaboration, you know, it's like a lot of different collaborations, but I do think part of me feels that the absence of fathers in our culture or lives or the story of this planet is ignored. You know, people don't appreciate how powerful and needed those people are in our lives. I also think just like it's terrifying becoming a mother, it's probably terrifying to become a father. I can't even imagine, you know? I always think about, I never had children, but when I thought about having them, I got really scared. I was like, I don't know if I can and then I thought to myself, I'm a big child and I can barely take care of myself. So what am I even thinking?
It's a lot of responsibility. I mean, I don't know. I've always been of the mind of trying to understand how much that shifts life. Like everything is different after that. I think you're delusional and again, I don't have any kids. So if you're out there, if you're a parent out there, I'm not talking trash to you because I don't have kids. I'm not going to be that guy. Somebody asked me recently, they said, why are you going to have kids? And I said, no, not interested. I wanted to for a long time. I wanted to be the dad that I didn't have. And then it got to the point where I was like, that's kind of an ego thing. So I'm going to bring a child into this world so I can prove to my dad who I don't know that I could be a better dad. Like, it doesn't really make sense to me. It doesn't align the way that I thought it would. That was an interesting thing that I let go. I thought for sure I had to do that. But I let go of that. I let go of that for whatever reason. I don't think it was right for me. I think that was more of an ego thing than you know, somebody who says I've always wanted kids and I knew, cool, love it, love it. I think for me, it was more from like a wounding. I'm going to prove to him that I could be a better dad, even though he's never going to know. And now I have to take care of this life for the next 18 to 25 years. Like, it's a big commitment to prove a point to somebody you're never going to see again.
Yeah. I just read an article that said that, well, for lots of different reasons, that children who are graduating from college are moving back in with their parents, the economy, so many things. And so parents are now discovering that their children aren't flying the coop and they can potentially live with their parents till they're like 30 or 35 or whatever. And so it could be a lot longer than 18 years. That's all I'm saying, Kevin.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. It's an interesting thing. I don't know. I think about that stuff all the time. I try to reverse engineer regret in advance as well as I can. You can only do it to such a degree, but I don't think I would regret not having kids. I can't imagine I would. To your point, I work a lot, and last night I'm eating dinner and I'm on my phone working. So I don't think it would be super healthy for me to have kids, honestly, based on what we're trying to do here, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And also I don't think people fully understand with the caliber of the show that you have, how it is work.
Oh yeah.
Potentially 24/7. It is, I would say the hustle is real, but that doesn't even begin to touch it.
It's heavy. I mean, we have an 18 or 19 person team. Like, we have people depending on us. Like, we pay their bills. We help them pay their bills, right? Like, that is a different level of responsibility where, I feel like recording an episode. That doesn't even matter at this point. I don't feel like we're recording four episodes after this. So after we get off here, we're going to do four episodes, and I don't necessarily want to. I don't know what we're going to talk about yet. We haven't picked episodes. My throat is sore. I'm tired. This week has been a grind, but that's what we signed up for. So yeah, it's different. It's definitely different than I expected, for sure. I didn't know it was going to look like this. And there's a sneaky part of me that kind of likes the mayhem. I like a little chaos. I do. It's exciting, and there's always a problem to solve. And I've just gotten better at solving problems, which feels good. I feel like more competent in that. So yeah, that's another interesting thing is I never thought I was going to be an entrepreneur. I never wanted to be. I wasn't the lemonade stand guy. That was never me. I didn't. And then it got to the point where it was like, I want to be able to choose what I do with my time. And I have less time than I ever have, but I have chosen that. So I think I just like locked myself into it. It's like, well, I want to choose. Okay, well, now I chose this business and this is what I do more than I did anything else. But it's really fulfilling. I think that's the most important piece.
I love that. And I was just listening to you and thinking, just based on my experience, I mean, over the years of working for different people, and I have a master's of divinity and I had 2 years of leadership training while I was in seminary. And I always think to myself, it's really challenging to be a good leader. And I have worked for so many people who are in positions of power that have no idea how to be a leader that, you know, is kind or strong or gracious, who can contain themselves and not say things about other employees. You know, it's, mm-hmm. I've just, and so I was listening to you and thinking to myself, you've completely stepped into this leadership role that's pretty profound and you're handling it with grace. And I'm sure everyone who works with you is really grateful for you and your presence and who you are, you know?
Now, this is a microcosm of life. So I have times behind the scenes where I'm crashing and burning and I'm probably not as kind as I would like. I always do my best. If I have a downfall, which I have many, one of them is I'm not good at giving people feedback. So what comes off as me being maybe kind and loving is that, and I'm a coward. So I'm afraid to hurt somebody's feelings. I don't enjoy that. I do not enjoy that. I've gotten my feelings hurt enough in life. I don't want to be the provider of that to somebody else. And I'm also robbing people of their growth, unfortunately. So that's something I'm really trying to work on in a constructive way, of course, right? Like, you know, don't do it just to be a butthead, but that is the next layer of leadership for me. But at the end of the day, like my business partner and I always have this conversation. I think people respect him more, but I think people like me more. And if you had to choose one or the other, I think I'd probably pick like. I do. I don't know. My thought is you'll respect me eventually. Maybe. But if you like me in the process, I feel like that's good enough for me. I've kind of made that decision. Now, he's the CEO. He kind of has to be the zig to my zag a little bit. And he is more, I need to be respected to be a leader. It's like, yeah, that's fair. I think we're playing different instruments in the symphony here.
Okay, I love that you are abundant with metaphors and I'm reveling in it. I just want to let you know that.
Trying to keep up with your vocabulary, so I'm trying to bring something here.
Well, just recently I decided to stop making myself be stupid for other people. And if they're uncomfortable with, you know, me and my level of intelligence, they can go away.
I love it. You fly free, my friend. Fly free. Flex that muscle all you want with me.
I would love to ask you the main question, which is, sure. I would so appreciate if you would share a story. It could be more than one story if you want, where something in your life happened, or not even necessarily to you, could have happened to someone else and you witnessed it, of something that you consider maybe mysterious or magical or even miraculous.
So I was thinking of this because I know that's the premise. I don't know if I have a really good answer other than this whole journey seems miraculous to me. It just, I don't know. I don't understand how it happened. I don't understand how I got here. I don't understand why things are the way they are. It's weird when people talk so highly of you. It's like, that's weird. I get that all the time because I go on so many shows. It's weird. It's just effing weird that's my life. So honestly, reality to me is relatively miraculous. I don't get it. Some days I take a step back and it's like, I can't believe we've done 2000 something episodes. Like, what? How the heck did that happen? That doesn't make any sense to me. And we've interviewed some world-class humans and we have amazing clients. And so probably this whole journey, because what we can't dive into in terms of depth in an hour of the last 8 years, I was there every day for it. And so many of the worst times of this journey, we can't even talk about because we don't have enough time. But somehow the next day happened, and it happened, and it happened. And it's going to continue to happen. That to me, I cannot wrap my, what do they say? Wrap your finger. What do they say? Mind.
Your head.
Head. How do you wrap your head around anything? That doesn't make any sense. That's why I thought finger, at least, you know, but yeah, this whole journey to me is, I don't understand it. It is truly humbling and it is the ultimate perspective. And some days I feel like I'm the best in the world at this. And other days I feel like I don't even know what I'm doing. And I think every day is just some sort of spectrum of that. So this journey to me is the most miraculous thing I can imagine because it is the thing that I am the most familiar with. So I understand how rare it probably is, all things considered.
Yeah. Did you ever have any times where you thought, I want to give up because I'm tired or this is so much work?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I was in 2019, she was my girlfriend. She's my wife now. Late 2019, early 2020. We moved in. She had a one bedroom apartment. I moved in with her. COVID was happening. It was like, am I even going to be able to see you if I don't live with you? And I couldn't pay rent. That Christmas. I couldn't get Christmas presents for her. It was freaking terrible. It was so, oh my God, it was so bad. Like, your family probably thinks I'm going to be a failure and I'm not going to be able to, you know, be a good husband. And that, I remember there was a time where we hosted a live event. And we were supposed to be co-hosting it with somebody, but they didn't really do anything. So we kind of put it on our shoulders and did the whole thing. And we had a dinner that we did a rehearsal dinner. And Alan and me went to the bathroom at the same time. And I was like, dude, the credit card's not going to clear. I don't know how we're going to pay for this. I don't know if the credit card is going to work. It's funny as hell now to talk about. At the time, it was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. So there were many times where I didn't want to quit. I wanted relief. I didn't want to quit. I didn't want to leave this behind. I can't imagine doing anything else. If all crashed and burned, we'd continue going and start again. I just wanted a breath. I wanted relief. I wanted a semblance of sustainability, I would say, more than anything. So yeah, I had many times, many, many, many times. But when I started this, I was convinced that if I could find a way to do this, I'd be the most fulfilled person ever. And that is the belief that I hung on to. And that is the thing that I thought would ultimately be the most worth it. And now I get to do this, right? So yeah, there were many dark nights where I didn't think I was going to be able to be successful, but I never could imagine myself doing anything else. When I left my job, I went and told my mom and my grandmother, and they said, "You're going to get another job, right?" And I said, "I will never work for somebody else as long as I live. Never. Nope. I will do whatever it takes within character and alignment to succeed at this." So yeah, many doubts, but can't imagine doing anything else.
Amazing. This is the last question. So
okay. I'm devastated, honestly.
I am too, because this has been so fun and seamless. And who knew that the words "universal soldier" would come out of my mouth today? Who could?
I'm glad I shared that moment with you.
Yes. So the Catholic Church has this, and this is sort of a question and an observation. So the Catholic Church has this notion of charism. And what that means is that the church believes, or I guess you could say Catholicism believes, that every single human is given a charism, or maybe more than one, which is, I guess, the easiest way to describe it, is a gift bestowed from the gods to you, to me, to every single person that they have to live into. It's kind of this, I don't know, blessing or, I don't know, character trait that once you understand that you possess it, you have to utilize it to make life better for other people. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's specifically given to you so that you can step into it to make this world a better place, to lift other people up. I guess I'm asking, okay, so I hope I'm not projecting onto you, but I'm looking at you, I'm talking to you. Your charism, for me, seems to be this open heart, this generosity of spirit, this intellectual curiosity about not only the world, but other people, and also this incredible drive to bring those things to the world in the form of helping other people to see what they can potentially become. Like, you want to lift other people up in this way to where they can also be splendid, and then they can in turn go to their communities and their workplaces and lift other people up. It's like this unending chain of goodness and kindness and helping people to understand who they can become if they understand their gifts. Okay, now that I've maybe, you know, you're like, let me just pat myself on the back.
Never, nope.
I know. But, you know, was it almost, I don't know, did you ever understand that concretely? And did you become drunk with power once you realized that? And that's sort of a joke.
Did I ever understand what?
That, you know, one of your charisms is to help other people and help them become,
yeah,
I don't know, more understanding of who they could become. And I mean, the work you're doing, frankly, is beautiful. And I use the capital letter B, right? Because there's a difference between saying, "Hey, look, that rainbow is beautiful." And then you say, "Hey, look at what that person's doing and what they're doing for so many other people." That is capital B. And we need more of that in this world. It is so desperately needed. So the work you're doing is actually quite profound.
I appreciate
because
that.
It's touching so many people.
Thank you.
You know, me, I still struggle with my ego. So if I was doing stuff like this, I'd be like, I need to go get drunk with power under that table for a while.
No, well, because in the grand scheme of things, it's not about me. It's not about me. It's through me, I think, and through Alan, right? That's a big piece of it. And one of the other things is, very humbly, I didn't design this. Alan did. That was a really hard thing for me. Like, I had to let that go. He is way smarter than me. And some people try to save me. They're like, no, you're smart. I understand. Thank you. I appreciate it. He's a genius. He's an actual genius. Like, he's playing with stuff that I don't have. And it's awesome. It's wonderful. So there was a piece of me that had to let that go. Like, I'm a piece of this for sure. And I'm the second biggest piece of this for sure. But it wouldn't be what it is and the way it is without my business partner. Just like it wouldn't be what it is the way it is without me for him, for sure. But that's something I always try to stay grounded in. Always, always. I am so lucky that I found him as a business partner. I am so blessed that I found him and I've been able to stay here for as long as I have. So that's a piece of it. And I think the other thing is, there's a big piece of me that very honestly understands that more quote unquote success equals harder life. So it's awesome. I'm not saying it's not awesome, but I don't think we're going to get to unicorn land where I just stop doing stuff and money just rolls in. That's never going to happen. That's not what we signed up for. That's another big piece of it. And then, yes, when I was a little boy, one of the things that I always, always deeply respected about my mother is, even though we didn't have a ton of money, she always gave money away. Mm. While it was not good and not what we should have been doing with the money, I have the same thing. And while Alan wants to teach people how to fish, I like to give people fish. And together we have a beautiful, I will give you a fish. And then while you eat the fish, Alan will teach you how to fish for yourself. And it's beautiful. And then you can teach other people how to fish. I have a very high net worth goal. One of the reasons, and I'll cry talking about it, I just want to help people with money. I do. That has been a dream of mine since I was a little boy, is to go to the mall, which might cease to exist by the time I can do it, and go to a single parent and say, whatever you need, I got it. Whatever you need for your kids, I got it. Thanksgiving, got it. If I don't accomplish that, I will have failed at what I think my mission is. Now, as shallow as that might sound to certain people, it is what it is. That's what I feel like I was put here to do. And I think I'm capable of doing it. And I'm willing to sign up for whatever that journey is. So yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with that. And I want to help people avoid the pain that I couldn't. For a lot of people, that's our purpose. Our purpose is to help a certain person avoid a certain problem in a certain way. And that is, I think for me, the money is a piece of it. And the awareness, right? That's why we do an episode every day. You can get a little bit better every day. But yeah, that is like, as you can tell, that is deep within me. I have to do that. That's not even a choice. I have to. That is a must. If I don't do that, I will be out of alignment with who I aspire to be, for sure.
That's it, everyone. My conversation with Kevin Palmieri. I think that you'll agree that he is totally hilarious, very self-effacing, and filled with gratitude at the blessings that life has to offer. For those of you listening to the long-form interview, there will be a little bit of an Easter egg after these episode show notes. I need to thank Kevin for being a guest on the podcast and being so gracious and for telling all of his stories. To find out a little bit more about Kevin and the magic that he is creating in the world, well, there will be a link in the episode show notes to both Kevin's website as well as his YouTube and Instagram. Do yourself a favor and do a deeper dive on this fabulous human being who wishes to go to the mall and give gifts of abundance to other people, be kind in the world, be generous in the world, and basically show up for his fellow human beings. I want to thank each and every one of you for listening to the podcast. If you could find it in your heart to give me a rating or a review, I would be ever so grateful. Those ratings and reviews mean so much to me, and they help other people find the podcast. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Kevin. Show up in the world for your fellow human beings. Show up in the world for the world. Figure out what you're good at, what you excel at, how you can bring joy and abundance in the world, and then bring it to other people, or bring it to the environment, or bring it to whatever cause you see fit. Be like Kevin and show up for those who need it, or dream big so that in the future you can show up for those who need it. I think Kevin's a big dreamer, and I love that about him. He's filled with graciousness and gratitude, so I would include that as well in Be Like Kevin. So with graciousness and with gratitude and being like Kevin, go forth into this holiday season, this month of December, and show up for those who might need a little bit of help. I'll see you later this week for the very next episode, and I hope you've enjoyed this midweek miracle episode.
Oh my gosh, Kevin, you're so, you and I are like two peas in a pod.
I knew that.
I have told everyone just really quickly, I have said, if I become successful and I make a lot of money, I'm paying for school lunches for all the kids in New Mexico. I'm just paying so kids can eat at least once a day. So they're like, I know I'm going to be able to eat. And then I found out that the state actually gives free school lunches to everybody. So it was like, ah. So I thought I'm going to have to figure something else out. But thank you so much. This has been, you are a delight.
Thank
you. I'm sure you know that already. And really, really funny and so engaging. So I am absolutely grateful to the universe that you exist.
Thank you.
And that you're helping so many people. I mean, the work you're doing is, yeah, capital B beauty. So
I appreciate it. And I would mirror all that. This has been wonderful. I will join you every day for the rest of time, as often as you'll have me. You're wonderful. You're a wonderful interviewer. You've done so much work on yourself. It's abundantly clear. So thank you for being a bright light in the world as well.
Well, and I'm sure, you know, the topic of Jean-Claude Van Damme doesn't come up too often in your life.
No, this is the first time in a minute. And honestly, in reflection, I'm sad that it took this long.
Truly.